Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to yet another episode of Movie Mastery. It is the podcast where we watch the movies you suggest, and then we come back and report on them. I am John. Over there is Jeff. We are your hosts for this journey. And this week, we have another special super duper surprise. It is Suburban Commando with Hulk Hogan.
I don't know who loaded up all these Terry Bollea movies all over our list, but we keep rolling them.
I mean, at this point, this is like the third, fourth one we've seen. I feel like, would you say that we are Hulk Hogan experts at this point for movies?
I feel like we know more about Hulk Hogan than most people.
Yeah.
Based only on his acting career and not, say, for example, his gross anti-media stance, weird leathery butt, consistent misuse of the N-word, or fashion choice post-WWF era.
Yeah.
But in terms of the crappy movies he made, I know about as much about him as I do about Ewoks, and that is a lot.
That is so much.
I know way more about Ewoks than most people.
That is very true.
Yeah, I know a lot about Ewoks. Guys, are kind of Ewoks. My thing. There's all these people, you know how all the people right now are like crazy angry at The Last Jedi for, I don't know, random dumb reasons?
Yeah.
Well, in 1983, that was the Ewoks. The whole world was super pissed off about Ewoks. They were like, teddy bears in my Star Wars? How dare you? And I was only 4 at the time, but I can tell you, no sir, they were great.
I can tell you, sir, as a 4-year-old, teddy bears in my Star Wars? Yes, please.
Yes, please. I would take another helping of teddy bears in my... Can we have a teddy bear say it's a trap instead of Admiral Akbar? That would be...
Can we have a teddy bear picnic here?
I want an Ewok edit of Return of the Jedi where Nia Numb and Admiral Akbar and Boba Fett and the Weequay guards are all replaced with Ewoks. And I want that today. Please
good.
Have that on my desk, John, if you could.
Have it on my desk with those pictures of Spider-Man.
Let's replace Han Solo with Dab Rendar as well.
Ah, Dab Rendar. Dab Rendar 2020.
Fan art, please.
Fan art of Dab Rendar, please.
Thank you.
So, it's not too off topic with the Star Wars talk, because in this, Hulk Hogan plays an alien?
Yeah. Folks, if you haven't seen Suburban Commando, but you've definitely seen the poster for it, because, you know, you're alive and you live in the United States, probably. I don't know. We probably have a lot of listeners who don't. But you've seen that poster. He's wearing like battle armor and there's kids hanging off his muscles. Like,
it basically looks like Mr. Mom. But
what did you think the movie was, everybody? And I can tell you what I thought it was. I thought it was he's some soldier who has to live in a town with like, but he's more like a James Bondy type because he has cool armor and stuff. Like, not a James Bond, but you know what I mean? Like a specialist. Like, he's a G.I. Joe who has to live in small town America.
Well, yeah. When you get the name Suburban Commando,
yeah,
obviously it's going to bring to mind the idea of Schwarzenegger. You're going to get Commando. You're going to get someone who's a super badass but has to live with a family now.
Yeah, he's a G.I. Joe who has to live in a small town neighborhood. That's basically what this is, what you think this is. And you're wrong. He is a...
Well, I mean, you're right, but you're also so wrong.
But no, he's a space alien?
Well, he's basically Space Schwarzenegger,
yeah,
who has come to Earth.
Yeah, so against his will.
It's a... Man, it is a very weird film to go into not thinking it's going to be that, and then have the very beginning of the film be like, it almost is a shot parody of the opening of Star Wars A New Hope.
I feel like we're almost out of Hulk Hogan movies now. Like, between you and me, there's like 2 left. You've got Three Ninjas, High Noon at Mega Mountain, and Rocky 3.
Yeah.
And I feel like at that point, we're probably done with Hulk Hogan movies.
Then we're all out of Hogan. We're so lost without him.
But he got all gross and he sued Gawker. his modern persona is a horrible, horrible human, but here he's just a horrible, horrible actor. So
yeah,
at least we can take comfort in that. You want to cut to music and come back and get serious?
No, I never want to get serious. I want to get Hogan.
There's a lot to talk about in this movie, and I am really looking forward to it.
Yeah, so we will be back with the full review, and it is a doozy. So have some music, and then Suburban Commando. I am a real American. Fight for the rights of Jeff, let me ask you a real quick question here.
Yeah, sure. Fire away.
Okay, we've seen a ton of these Hulk Hogan movies.
Yes, we've seen at least three, probably more.
Yeah. Now, my question for you is, why are these always bad, but bad in the same way?
No, you're absolutely right. It's like he's being followed by a terrible writer. And here's the thing, these movies are very far apart. Like,
oh yeah, it's not like he got four movies in a row.
No,
like,
this movie's from the mid to late 90s. This came out like the same year as Blade.
Yeah, like this is not an old movie.
No.
I mean, when you think of something like Santa with Muscles, you're talking about like way in the past.
Like the 80s, and the same thing for whatever that movie is where he plays Rip.
No Holds Barred.
Yeah, like, but here's the thing. They are all the exact same bad. God, that makes me realize this is our fourth Hulk Hogan movie.
Yeah.
Because there's the Santa one.
Uh-huh. Santa with Muscles.
So Santa with Muscles, No Holds Barred, and, oh, I guess that makes this the third one.
I thought there was one more.
I feel like another one, but whatever. So, but yeah, they're all bad in the same way. They're bad in that Hulk Hogan needs to be friend to all children, and then also that all the jokes are like dusted off like Laurel and Hardy shit. Like they are as old as the hills.
I mean, it's weird because he has to have comedy in all of his stuff. Like,
yeah,
he very much is going for a Schwarzenegger vibe.
Yeah, but
I want to be an action hero, but also have like dumb comedy.
Yeah, he wanted to be like Schwarzenegger circa like Twins and, you know, a Kindergarten Cop and nothing else.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is he wanted to be a Schwarzenegger, but he aimed for the bad Schwarzenegger.
Well, I guess he could aim for the modern stuff, which is all, you know, oh, I am a small town sheriff with an accent that makes no sense. Oh, so I have to put up with Johnny Knoxville.
Oh, man, nobody wants to put up with Johnny Knoxville.
No, I just want him to exist off on his own little sphere and be Johnny Knoxville over there.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he's kicking his friends in the balls and being surprisingly fearless around, like, horrible animals and things. Like, I love Johnny Knoxville in Jackass. I hate Johnny Knoxville in, oh, Men in Black 2? Just picking something at random.
But yeah, all of the comedy in his movies is just weird shtick.
Yeah, it's all just shtick.
It makes no sense in the context of the film where it'll be like, okay, we've got a movie that's about Hulk Hogan and he's a big space badass and he comes to Earth and he's trying to like essentially teach his nebbish landlord to not be such a dweebus. But the jokes that are in here are just like, let's take a quick timeout from that for us to do a joke about a mime.
It was three timeouts in this movie to do mime bits.
Oh yeah.
What is going, how many, it's the same mime every time, but I mean, he's in small town America in the sense that he is in Los Angeles, very clearly.
In the sense that he is clearly somewhere in California.
So he's definitely somewhere in Southern California, but everywhere he goes, even in the middle of the night, there's this one mime who's always there, and just as...
It is my goddamn favorite to see him, because the first time we see him, Hulk Hogan is walking around at what is
probably
almost
like,
clearly at least like midnight.
Yeah,
and like, there is a mime on the street miming.
Doing invisible box miming, and I'm like, guy, you are like in front of a liquor store in suburbia. If you're gonna do miming in a city, you have to go downtown and go to that tourist area.
Well, you have to either be in a tourist area, go to one of the large parks,
yeah,
something like that. But there's never been a mime who's like, oh, you know where a great place to get up in full mime outfit, makeup, and do my shtick is out front of like Joe's Italian Pizzeria in suburbia.
Yeah, oh man, right next to the carpet store. Are you kidding me? That is the best. That is primo miming.
that's that primo mime territory.
I don't, what the hell's it's like if you're in San Diego, you go mime in front of Seaport Village.
Yeah.
If you're in Chicago, you mime in front of that big metal bean.
That dumb bean.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in New York, you mime in Times Square. You can't mime everywhere else.
Yeah, you don't get to, like, go out to Queens and be like, here I am, I'm a miming. Like, stop that. You don't get to do that.
I'm in Colonial Williamsburg doing some... You know what? It's probably
right,
fine
that's,
there.
That's 100% accurate.
Yeah, that's
there's
right.
Probably a crowd of mimes there.
There's probably, like, a $500 a day boutique school for miming that's there.
There's a flash mob of mimes that shows up.
There's so many mimes there that food trucks follow the mimes around.
The mimes are miming being in a food truck.
Oh man, all the barbers are mimes. They only pretend to cut your hair, and that's why everyone has those long rectangle beards.
Yeah, there you go.
That's okay. Colonial Williamsburg explained. It's miming. But this movie set in 1996, and you know, hipsters hadn't descended yet. So
much like my testicles.
All right, so here's our cast of characters, and we
don't just gloss over my testicle joke.
I'm
come
sorry, your cast. Do it again. I was getting ready for something else.
Yeah, you never pay attention to me and my jokes.
That's
fuck
not
you,
true.
Buddy.
I love you in your jokes. Oh, you're hurting me.
Man.
I sincerely apologize for missing your what I'm
my
sure was
descended testicle joke.
That's what it was.
You see?
I'm appreciative now. Okay.
Appreciate my jokes.
I am. I'm sorry. I will try to invest more in you and your jokes.
Please, I need you to hear me. Don't just listen. I need you to really hear what I'm saying.
And what you are really saying is descended testicles.
What I was saying was just the worst goddamn joke.
And then because of your sharp comedic instincts, you dragged the episode to a halt so we could stop and evaluate it.
Yep. That's what I do. I know when it's time to just completely halt the momentum of a show and talk about my descended testicles.
And our relationship. Yeah, that's definitely... You're pulling this show over.
Oh, yeah. Look, if I have to reach back there, it is not going to be pretty.
So the movie opens in space.
The movie opens with almost a, like, shot-for-shot parody of A New Hope.
Well, the movie,
because
yeah.
It's got, like, a Star Destroyer-looking ship that goes by.
It does the long Star Destroyer thing.
Yeah.
Every space movie does that. The entering from the top of the frame, long triangular ship thing.
Yes. And we find out that, oh, there's an evil space general, and he's got the president of space with him. And
he's the president of some planet, but he might as well be the president of space. I mean, first of all, the evil guy has a cape on over his business suit, and the president has business suit, and they're humans.
Yes, everyone is human.
It's like Spaceballs.
It is very Spaceballs.
just some guys in suits who are like, I am the evil overlord of, I'm the evil, what's his name, General Suitor. Like, Suitor, that's like a regular...
Yeah.
But I have kidnapped you, President Abraham Lincoln, because your hat is too large.
Now, can I get a suggestion from the audience?
It's so cheap looking.
Ugh.
And then we, you know, they're on a giant Star Destroyer looking thing, and the evil overlord Suitor is threatening this random space president.
And he's like, oh, no one could stop me. Smash cut to, we can't see it yet, but just sort of like the legs and torso of Hulk Hogan walking around beating up bad guys.
In Hulk Hogan's physicality in this movie is entirely reduced to what it is in every movie he's ever been in, clowning on chumps.
Oh, yeah. It's just, when we first get it, because all we see is, like, legs and torso,
mm-hmm.
we get blaster sounds and then dudes flying and, like, landing near him.
Yes.
And I don't know why they're waiting on the big reveal of this is Hulk Hogan. You came to see a Hulk Hogan movie.
It's not like you're going to be pleasantly surprised to learn that this isn't Hulk Hogan we're following around the ship. Like, if they did, it was like, oh my god, it's actually, I don't know, Mean Joe Green stomping around.
That would be real weird.
Real weird. Or The Undertaker, who is in this movie.
Yeah, The Undertaker is in this, sans any sort of Undertaker getup, and has no lines that he gets to say.
And he also is credited by his real name.
Yeah.
But you can tell it's The Undertaker right away, because it's got his big Frasier-looking face.
Yeah, you can tell it's The Undertaker, because it looks like a greasy Frasier has decided to fight Hulk Hogan.
Yep, just some big, muscly, greasy Frasier. How come that's not one of the character classes in the White Wolf Street Fighter game?
Okay. Okay, you can be a Blanco or a Guile or a Greasy Frasier.
Well, is he a quarter circle character or a charge character? Because I ain't playing no pullback for 3 seconds.
Oh, he's definitely a charge character.
Oh, it's too bad. Pull back for 3 seconds and press forward and punch to insult your father.
Niles, this is the worst idea you've ever had.
Father, I don't care for this chair anymore. It's just Hulk Hogan stomping around a spaceship, clowning on chumps.
And when he finally does fight General Suitor, we get a point where he, like, cuts the dude's hand off.
It's
and
not
we
him,
find
it's
out-
the space president cuts off Suitor's
no,
hand.
No, he throws a thing at him. He throws some dumb...
He pulls a metal envelope, like he has a mailing envelope in his sleeve. He reaches into his sleeve and pulls out a throwing envelope.
Yeah, one of those throwing envelopes that you get.
Throws it at Suitor, whose hand comes off.
And that's when I'm not sure if we're supposed to go like, oh, he's an alien or he's like the lizard. Because his hand starts growing back,
but the hand is like lizardy. Yeah, he's Kurt Connors.
Yeah, it's definitely Kurt Connors, space general.
So this evil general space Connors has kidnapped space president.
And oh boy, things are about to go down.
But, you know, mostly it's just this random dude, Suitor, kind of stomping around the bridge being like, Ramsey,
Oh, Ramsay cannot stop me this time, even though he stopped me every other time.
That kind of thing.
And then there's a bunch of guns, and Shep Ramsay, our hero, decides that it's time to leave, and he just leaves the president in there and jumps down, like, a garbage chute and leaves little bombs on his way to an escape pod.
Yeah, this is his plan. He goes stomping into the ship, and then he gets to General Suter and the space president, gets a good look at them, and then jumps out of an escape hatch and drops bombs everywhere and leaves and blows up the whole ship.
Yeah, I was like,
why do you even go on it then?
What were you even doing here? Why walk up to the fucking cockpit of this ship? Why not just go up to the door and put bombs next to it and be like, I'm good?
Yeah, if you're not trying to save the space president, then what are you doing on the ship?
Yeah.
So he blows up the ship, and then he gets to his own ship, which is spinning around in circles because that's the easiest effect they could do, because it's just him sitting on like a couch that's been made up like a spaceship, and then they just rotate the camera.
And
he gets contacted by his superior officer.
Yeah, we get one of those scenes where it's like, oh, Shep, yeah, you blew up three city blocks. We get that sort of thing, but in space.
Yeah.
But since it's Hulk Hogan, it can't be, you're a loose cannon and we can't have you, you're a dangerous guy. It's just, hey, man, why don't you take a vacation?
It's, you're too good at your job, you need to relax for a while.
Look, there's nothing for you to do, you've already blown everything up in the galaxy.
Because that's another hallmark, like we were talking about at the start of the show. I think, like, we should hit these as we come to them. First of all, we've already talked about Hulk Hogan movies are always the oldest jokes in the world.
Yeah.
The second one that we're getting to now is Hulk Hogan is always the greatest character and is not allowed to have a flaw.
No. Hulk Hogan is sort of like Space Marines in the 40K universe of you cannot show them to lose.
Yeah, they're not allowed to lose. So even if the book's about another species, like, because I never played Space Marines when I was playing 40K. I was always playing monsters. Every one of my codexes I ever bought was like, all right, let's show how Dark Eldar are badass or whatever. They started fighting some Space Marines and it took them a little while to lose.
Yeah. It's an annoying thing that makes it so there's no tension in any of these Hulk Hogan movies, because there's no point where you're like, oh boy, he's down and out and he's gotten his ass kicked. It's always, oh, maybe someone has punched him to the ground, but then he stands up and punches them. Like, there's no I have been defeated moment.
Yeah, he apparently just never wanted to do that. Like, there's no Hulk Hogan movie that is his Rocky. I mean, he's in a Rocky movie, but you know what I mean. Like,
it's not his Rocky.
It's Rocky's Rocky, and he's just Thunder Lips. But in every other Hulk Hogan movie, it's just, what do? I punch dudes until I win the girl at the end. Which we have another thing to talk about when we get there.
But
this movie, he fights The Undertaker, but there's no threat to it at all. It's just jokes and fun because Hulk Hogan is not allowed to lose.
Yeah. So he goes to Earth.
He doesn't want to, by the way.
Because
he fucking hates Earth. He didn't say fucking, because again, Hulk Hogan is friend to all children, but I hate Earthlings.
Because he is so angry about the idea of a vacation, he smashes his own console, which fucks it up enough that he has to go land somewhere and recharge. But because he's wanted by, I don't know, the space rebellion that hate everyone, he has to land somewhere and charge up very slowly so no one notices that he's there.
Yes, he can't use more than 0.1 of his power or he will be trackable.
Yeah, so he's got to land somewhere and like charge up his ship, and it's going to take like 2 months to do.
Yes. So he's told he has to spend 6 weeks on Earth, and he's like, no, not Earth. I dislike Earth.
Oh, no, Earthlings are the worst.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, whatever. I mean,
that's
fine.
That's probably true.
I would think that, too, if I was a dirtbag who grew up in Florida.
I hate Earth.
I hate Florida, and by extension, Earth.
Earth gave me Florida, and so I hate it.
So he lands in some Los Angeles closed arcade / disco?
Yeah, it's... like, he lands in basically what is a warehouse rave.
Yes.
Because no one's there. It's completely abandoned. But when he turns the lights on, it starts like a disco ball and some funk music starts
up
or whatever.
Strobe lights and shit, which he has to get mad about and unplug angrily.
Yeah, he rips the cords out of the wall. It's not enough for him to go, oh, that was stupid, and turn it off. He has to like rip the plugs out.
Yes. So, okay, he needs to lay low for about 6 weeks. Not let anyone on Earth know that he's an alien. Not draw attention to himself. Just find a place to bed down and be quiet for about 6 weeks.
meanwhile, our other character.
Yeah, well, we'll get introduced to the other family in this movie, the family, which is Christopher Lloyd and his wife, Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, we've got the most unappealing couple you could possibly imagine outside of Hulk Hogan and whatever dirtbag that he is with.
Yeah. It's true. true. I really can't wait. But so Christopher Lloyd plays what else? A absent-minded inventor.
Yeah, he's a architect in this one because that's what you
got
to do.
Yeah. So we've got him as an architect, but he is his wife Shelley Duvall is badgering him because he has not asked for a raise recently.
Yeah, he is the standard your badass tough guy hero needs to teach the nebbish coward guy how to be a badass.
Yeah,
I mean,
you've
seen this in so many movies.
He's the Eugene Levy to Hulk Hogan's Queen Latifah.
Yeah, he is the Will Ferrell to
Hulk
Mark
Hogan's
Wahlberg.
Kevin James. Wait, I'm sorry. I think I might have the Hitch movie backwards. Kevin James teaches Will Smith how to be a badass, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, Paul Blart, Mall Blart.
This is Mark Wahlberg in Daddy's Home.
Okay, fair enough. Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell in Daddy's Home too. Daddies.
You didn't even listen when I first said it. Again, you never listened to
me.
We
were both doing things.
I listened to all of yours.
Oh, yeah? What was mine?
I listened and I responded.
Oh, well, fine. I didn't even hear your response because I don't care what you're saying.
I know you don't. How dare you? My feelings.
I need to get so many jokes in, John. You don't understand. I need to get 5 jokes in per thing.
I need these bits.
I need these jokes to feed my family.
These bits, please. Please, sir, these bits.
Please never talk to me or my jokes again. All right, fine. So he's the nebbish idiot to Hulk Hogan's big dumb badass. He promises his wife he will go and ask for a raise. Oh, also he's got some kids, and I was amazed that
that is also how the movie treats his kids.
Yes, they're in the movie. I was expecting them to be way more important because it's a Hulk Hogan movie, and Hulk Hogan.
I want to say this one felt like Hogan was trying to somewhat get away from that.
Yeah, although he still ends up doing a lot of like skateboard gags with local ragamuffins.
Well, yeah, but he's still like when it starts mean to the children. And he's like, kids, get out of here, bro. I'm scary.
Yeah, because 9 times out of 10 in a Hulk Hogan movie, thankfully there aren't 10 Hulk Hogan movies. 9 times out of 10, though, he just sort of is friend to all children, and he's like, hey, kids. Because I guess he only looks impressive when he's near kids. Like, if you put him near adults, everyone's like, oh, this guy's like some sort of dumb cartoon.
Well, with professional wrestling sort of being his brand, mm-hmm. he was like, oh, I need to appeal to kids because that's my bread and butter.
Yeah. Well,
and nowadays that's not. It's weird idiots in their 30s. So, you know.
So,
there you go.
Another fun thing about this is that one of the two kids is played by Michael Faustino. And I was very briefly excited because I was like, oh, sweet. From Married with Children. I can't wait. It's going to be like just how Mila Kunis was in No Holds Barred or. No, she's in Santa with Muscles.
Yes.
So we're going to get to see a young David Faustino. And then as I was saying that, I was like, oh, wait, that's David Faustino.
Oops, not Michael Faustino. Who's Michael Faustino?
So we looked him up, and it's David Faustino's brother.
Who has never done anything.
No, he's in a lot of stuff. He's in a bunch of movies, but never is a big thing.
Yeah.
So he's around. He gets work.
He gets it done.
He probably gets about as much work as David Faustino, if we're being honest.
I mean.
And we are.
We are only ever brutally honest
this
show.
David Faustino is more lucky than anything when it came to Married with Children.
Yeah.
There was never any episode where I was like, thank goodness that one had so much Bud in it.
Bud was really what saved this episode.
Yeah, if this episode didn't have all that fine quality Bud acting, I would have turned this off.
Oh,
I mean, seriously,
man.
When you talk Married with Children jokes, have you ever been like, and this is a good one from Bud?
No, man.
No, it's all just Al and Peg.
Shut up, Peg.
Flush. That's all there is. What else are you hoping for?
So we get his work situation where Christopher Lloyd's boss
Larry Miller.
Larry Miller, who is a boss that is nonstop talking and is just like constantly buttering people up, telling shitty jokes, and then shoving them out the door before anything can happen.
This is our second Larry Miller appearance on Movie Mastery. If you are trying to remember the other one, he was the big gay bat in Food Fight.
The big gay bat in Food Fight. And here he is, back again.
Yeah.
As a big gay bat.
He's always a big gay bat at heart. That should be one of his stand-up specials.
Yeah.
So, in case you were curious where else you had seen Larry Miller with us. So, he goes in to ask for the raise, but he doesn't get a word in edgewise, because that's how Larry Miller's character is.
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, you're the heart and soul of this company. Let me just tell you, I couldn't do this without you, and you work so hard. You're not like the other people. You never ask for a raise, and that's what I love about you. Anyway, get out there and work hard. Closes the door on him.
Yeah. Also, you need to work all this weekend, because I need these plans.
Anyway, goodbye!
And then he meets with some Japanese people for a running gag about how the Japanese these people travel in groups, speak Japanese to each other, and don't know what English is.
Well, it's that they know English. It's just we don't, so we get subtitles where they make fun of us, and then the translator says, he said that it is an honor to meet you, sir.
Yeah.
Like, it's that gag.
It's a pretty standard gag, and we get to see these three Japanese people all the way through the movie.
Yeah.
Because apparently, the weeks that this movie takes place over are one long meeting with these three Japanese people.
Well, yeah, we're supposed to get the whole, like, oh, Hogan, you've got to be on this planet for, like, 6 weeks, but the plot of this takes, like, 5 days, maybe?
Yeah, a couple of days. So then we get to the other recurring scene for Christopher Lloyd, which is when he drives home from work.
Yeah, the drive home from work scene is weird in that it is always, like, the same cars pull up to the same red light.
Yeah, there's 12 cars. They all pull up in the exact same order to a red light in the middle of Los Angeles where there is no one else in either direction.
Yeah, like, they look in either direction. Nothing is there. Everyone's revving their engines like it's a race. And then the light turned green, and they all race to get to the next light, which is currently green. But by the time they get there, it turns yellow. And Christopher Lloyd is the world's worst driver because it turns yellow while he's going through it, but then he stops in the middle of the intersection and backs up,
which is way more dangerous for someone who's supposed to be like, I always play it safe.
I play by the rules and I always want to be safe and never cause a problem. I'm like, doing that is the most likely thing to fucking get you and a bunch of other people in an accident.
Yes, because there's people behind him every time. For some reason, in his shitty little gremlin hatchback he's driving in this movie, he always shows up to that first light in pole position.
Yeah, he's always there first, but then he gets to the next light and freaks out that it is currently yellow. Because it's not like he gets there
and it's red and he runs
and it's red and everyone else is trying to run it and he's not. It is, he is following the law and then suddenly realizes, fuck it, I don't care, and pulls back.
Now, here's the thing. Seeing this once is enough to establish that his character is a nebbish weirdo, right? We see this scene without alteration 3 times, and then once with a change to it.
And I would like to mention that it's not a repeat. It's not like the same footage.
No.
They shot the same scene 4 different times.
And there's no change to it. The first 3 times it happens, it's not like there's any dialogue in the scene. He pulls up. There's the same 2 cars on either side of him. He revs his engine like they do. He refuses to go through the yellow light. And then twice more throughout the course of the film, that exact scene, but shot differently, because they took 3 takes, I guess, will play out identically.
Yep.
And then finally, something insane happens in the last one. Instead of him learning his lesson, something insane happens instead.
Yeah.
Anyway, Hulk Hogan is stomping around Los Angeles' suburbs, saying things like, I hate suburbs.
And he's in full spaceman battle armor at this point.
And everyone in town is commenting on it.
I have never been in any place, suburb or not, where if I was walking around, even in a weird outfit, I would have literally everyone on the street turning and being like, oh my goodness, there's a man and he's wearing an outfit. What a weirdo. Oh my God. Is he going to a whatever? And you're like, stop. No one's
doing
this. No one cares.
It's Los Angeles. You see 5 weirdos for every 4 normal people. So what are they afraid he is? I don't understand. It's like, oh God. I mean, literally, there was a big old obituary in Los Angeles like last week because the dude who looked like Jesus died.
Yeah.
There was just some dude, they called him North Hollywood Jesus, who just wandered around looking like Jesus, and everyone knew him, and if you saw him walking by, you'd be like, hey, it's that guy. You wouldn't be like, oh my God, is that a Jesus?
Is that a Jesus?
So, it's just dumb. But, and then, of course, he has to do some Hulk Hogan, I'm a good person and I hate big bad people shtick.
Yeah, where he sees a dog trapped in a hot car and the horror asshole owner is sitting in some restaurant yelling for his dog to shut up, and then we get that like screen flip and now the owner is in the car and
the
dog
is
at the restaurant.
Yeah.
It's jokes like that. It's jokes like that all the way down. It's just, let me show you a reversal of what this was.
And then the standard Hulk villain in this situation, too, which is, this is a big, fat, bald dude who's completely covered in grease and dirt, dressed like a shitty biker, and he's just sitting there shoveling burgers into his face and being like, dog, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's gonna go menace Captain Planet next.
And I mean, it's always someone that is very clearly bad and not redeemable in any way. Like,
yes.
You don't get a nuanced villain for Hulk Hogan.
No, Hulk Hogan doesn't need a nuanced villain, or even just a regular villain. It's not enough that they're bad. They also have to be stupid and gross.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be big dumb idiots who are like,
I can't believe anyone wouldn't want to get a big piece of me. I got to harass some ladies.
And it's like, are they worried that if they put in just an ordinary bad guy, that Hulk Hogan will look, you know, worse than them? So they got to really go down the cast list to be like, oh, this guy's fat and greasy. Bring him in.
Oh, fine.
Just think back to No Holds Barred with that dude who Hulk picks up by his, like, shirt. And he's like, what's that smell? And he's like, I dudied myself or whatever.
Yeah.
That is a Hulk villain.
Yeah, it's just someone who is unrepentantly evil, but also
stupid and weak.
Stupid and terrible, and there to make Hulk Hogan look better.
It's so noticeable. So that's Hulk Thing 3. His villains are always identical. So he finds a sign on a flagpole as he's stomping down the street, and the sign says, apartment for rent, with a big arrow on it.
And then we get some more Christopher Lloyd, where we find out his neighbors are fixing, like, race cars?
Yeah, there's, like, his whole street is covered in race cars. And not just, like, you know, nice, like, street race cars, but, like, drag racers. There's, like, a whole bunch of drag race cars all over his street.
Yeah, there's very strange amounts of cars there. And they have decided to park their cars that they are working on such that they immediately block the driveway so that Christopher Lloyd can't park in his driveway.
Yes, and he, you know, kind of rolls down his window and sort of blusters a little bit. He's like,
great Scott! Can you guys please move these cars?
No, shut up. Park somewhere across the street. And he's like, well, okay.
Oh, very well. It's like, what? Wouldn't he call the police? He seems like the sort of guy who would call the cops on this situation.
No, because he's
a big wimp.
He's a coward.
Yeah. So, okay, goes in his house, gets, you know, was that the scene where Shelley Duvall comes out in her sexy outfit?
Yes. Shelley Duvall comes out in a big curly wig and a nightgown?
Yeah, a flower print kimono over, I'm going to say,
the least sexy lingerie possible?
Yeah, perhaps the least sexy lingerie that's ever been.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh dear, I'm not interested in that, because I was born 74 years old.
And Shelley Duvall's like, oh, that's fine. I'm not allowed to have sex. You'd probably destroy me. I'm a ghostling or something.
Yeah, Shelley Duvall is kind of a ghostling. But then she's like, the reason that she was going to all this length of trying to butter him up with some sex is because she has, over the course of about one day, completely torn apart his workshop and built a fully furnished apartment that she intends to rent.
Yeah, when he first leaves in the morning, Christopher Lloyd's shed is a big workshop where he's got, like, a bunch of power tools and he's been working on some random nonsense. But in the time it has taken him to leave for work and come back, it has been turned into a painted, fully furnished apartment where there's, like, a bed and, like, flowers and a TV.
There's, like, a kitchen in there and a bathroom and a shower. And it's like, how she did this in a day. And also, even though it's fully furnished, all the closets are completely stuffed with power tools.
Yeah.
So
I don't, whatever. Fine,
it does,
sure.
It does. So she's turned a shed in their backyard into an apartment. And wouldn't you know it, there's a knock on the door because Hulk Hogan, based on the sign he found, I'm sorry, Shep Ramsey, based on the sign he found that said apartment for rent with a big arrow that he pulled off the wall and started following the arrow, which to me meant he should just be walking in a circle.
Yeah, he pulled off and the arrow's like, left.
To the left.
Left and left. Left and to the left.
Left again. But then he walks several blocks to a random house in a random neighborhood and inquires about the apartment that's behind the house and invisible.
And, of course, let me tell you, if you were wondering there was any other signage, of course not, because Christopher Lloyd didn't know there was an apartment for rent. There is no sign that says, we have an apartment for rent in front of this house.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan just, I assume, went door to door in the direction of that arrow and went, apartment for rent? No. Okay.
I hate suburbia. Are you a gross weirdo I could pick up and ask if you pooped yourself?
Apartment for rent? No.
Okay.
Apartment for rent?
No. Okay.
And he's just been doing this for hours now.
So the door gets knocked on and Christopher Lloyd, for some reason, is like, no, don't open it. You never know what kind of weirdos there might be. And, you know, it turns out that the kind of weirdo is Hulk Hogan. And,
yeah, that's the kind of weirdo it might be.
And Shelley Duvall has to do a really... poor Shelley Duvall gets forced into going the, ooh, such muscles type response.
A muscles man.
Yeah. Oh. When I'm sure she was like... Every decade, I fall a little farther. Remember when I was in The Shining? Do you remember?
You remember when I had, like, a job? Like, I could act in things, and it was good. And now, who baby now?
Oh, here I am, scene partner Hulk Hogan, having to fawn on him. Yeah, that's me.
I have to pretend that Hulk Hogan is not just a big, greasy mess of a man. Like just trying to pretend that a pile of sloppy Joe is sexually appealing.
This huge mat of wet Florida has to be the thing I'm attracted to. I tell you what, I'm going to have Jack Daniels tuck me into bed tonight. That's that's for sure. Stay
that's
strong, Shelley Duvall.
It's you. You got this. You got this.
She's just having to do that Boogie Nights talking to her penis in the mirror scene. Yeah. You're a star. You're a star.
You're a bright, shining star.
All right. So it's an old Boogie Nights a couple episodes now. Anyhow, they rent him the apartment, and then he shows up for some reason to a big family dinner.
Yeah.
You know how you do with your apartment tenant is feed them as well.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is weird, because they tell him that, like, you know, they're going to have dinner with him or whatever. And I go, this is odd, because he's just renting an apartment in the back. You would think that if this was, say, a bed and breakfast or something like that, or if he came out and was like, hey, I haven't quite moved in yet. Can I bum some food off of you guys? They'd be like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But they, like, expect him to be there for dinner?
Yeah, they set out the spread. Also, he walks in holding their kids by the back of the neck, and he's like, what are these? Are they
are
yours?
Are these yours?
And then drops them, and they're like, yay, he's muscly.
Yay, that was fun. And then are never seen again.
Yeah, they just disappear for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's one scene of, we had to get the box art of this, of kids hanging off of Hulk Hogan's arms, and now they are done.
So, at this point, he has dinner with them, and it's boring and stupid, and I don't want to talk about it. But we go back into space, where Suter, who has survived the explosion somehow, is recruiting a pair of goons who will have to chase down
we got
Shep
bounty
Ramsey.
Hunters. We got bounty some hunters coming after Shep,
and their names are like Knuckles and Mutch. I think it's,
yeah, man.
I think it's Hutch. It's Hutch and Knuckles.
Hutch and Knuckles and Knuckles.
It's Sonic and Hutch and Knuckles.
And boy, howdy, they are the quintessential bad guys for Hulk Hogan, in that they are big muscle dudes that are covered in grease.
Yeah,
like,
they're just
toe to tip.
Yeah, they just had to roll around on the floor of a car mechanic place.
And
just, they're all covered. They're all smeared in random patches of just black grease. I don't know if it's supposed to make them look like aliens or whatever, but it just makes them look like background extras on Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, these are, I don't know what they were going for with the grease aesthetic, but sure, why not?
They're so greasy. It's such a terrible aesthetic, because it just means that they pick up every light on every set.
And they're gonna go as a couple, and they're gonna find him.
I mean, it looks like a big fat Frasier shining like a Christmas tree in most scenes. Except for the parts of them that are covered in black ooze.
Ah, yes, the ooze.
The secret of the ooze is that it's the Undertaker's face grease.
And they're in big, dirty clothes, and they look like they crawled out of a dumpster somewhere.
And the other guy here is another character actor that, the two of them, the Undertaker, I don't know if I'd necessarily call him a character actor. He's in maybe two movies.
Nah, he's just the Undertaker.
Yeah, but the other guy is Tony Longo, who died a few years back, but was a big deal character actor for playing, like, big heavies in a lot of films.
Yeah, he's always playing this type of role. Just a big, buff guy who's there to try and beat people up.
You know, it took me, after I said the Undertaker is not really a character actor, I spent some time trying to think of other movies with the Undertaker in them, and I remembered that there is one. He's in the sequel to that surfing penguins movie, Surf's Up.
Is he?
Yes, because the second Surf's Up movie, which came out in theaters, was one of those WWE combo things. Just like when we watched that Scooby-Doo thing.
Yeah.
It's the same shit. It's just Surf's Up, the penguin movie, except now there's four new surfers. They're the Undertaker, John Cena, one of the lady wrestlers, and I don't know, Rey Mysterio Jr. or something.
One of the lady wrestlers. I'm very sad that is entirely accurate to how they would treat that. Here's some lady wrestler, because our agent told us we had to include one.
I mean, literally everywhere you go and see WWE promotional material, that's how they do it. They pick four wrestlers at random, but one of them has to be black and one of them has to be a lady.
Yep.
Like, Little Caesars is literally running a wrestling promotion right now, and it's like The Miz and some black dude, something.
John Henry,
some lady, and some other guy.
A guy you don't know.
I think it's The Miz and Sheamus.
I don't know.
And it's just everywhere you go. And that's what it was in the Scooby-Doo movie, and that's what it is in the Surf's Up movie. They pick four, almost as if they're drawing them out of a hat.
Well, we need four wrestlers, we need one ethnic guy, a lady, and then two people that are somewhat known.
But not 100% known, because we're saving that shit for the big leagues.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you get your biggest wrestler for the Little Caesars can get is The Miz.
That Miz, though.
I don't know if you think The Miz is bigger or smaller than Seamus? I have no idea.
I don't know. He's probably slightly smaller than Seamus. Seamus is tall.
Seamus is a big dude, and he's in a couple of movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Rocksteady in that Ninja Turtles movie.
That Ninja Turtles.
We're just taking this whole thing on a walk, because screw Hulk Hogan movies.
We're on walkabout with this one now.
So, getting back to it. So, yeah, they send The Undertaker and Tony Longo after Hulk Hogan, and that's the end of that. It doesn't come up again for a while.
There's a scene now where Hulk Hogan is going to go for a walk.
He goes and out in the middle of the night for a walk.
That's great. But when he leaves, Christopher Lloyd goes and sneaks into Hulk Hogan's room and finds a laser gun under his bed because he sees him hide something there.
Yes.
Christopher Lloyd dicks around with it, manages to turn it on, fires the gun, and it shoots a laser blast that makes an explosion sound. But when he looks, there's just like a hole in the wall. And when he looks through it, there's that...
One of the
like,
neighbor's race cars.
Yeah, one of those fucking... like
I don't know, it's a Formula One or something.
Yeah, it's like a Formula One car.
Actually, I think it's more like a NASCAR car, because it's like the kind of car where you can lift the entire like fuselage of the car
off.
But
it's not NASCAR. It's one of those ones that has the super narrow front.
Oh, is it one? So it's a drag racer?
Yeah.
I forgot which car it was. It got blown up.
It was that red one.
Okay, so it's the red drag racer. The one that literally has a sponsored by the TV show Roseanne sticker on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that one.
He blows that up, which is important to note, because it's never mentioned again, and we also see that car again, and it is fine the next day.
Yeah, like the neighbors are never like, someone blew up our car! It never happens. Instead, the car is fine in most shots for the rest of the film.
Yeah, it very much feels like this was a scene that they had originally figured, you know what, we filmed it, but we're gonna delete it. It doesn't really work with the rest of the film. We don't want to spend a lot of time on, you know, these neighbors having a car blown up. And then they left it in anyway?
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, someone at the Filmmaking Institute or whatever it is told them, hey, your movie's way less than a movie long. It's like a TV show episode. And they were like, oh, okay, I guess we'll
put all the deleted scenes
just,
in?
Just get all the deleted scenes, put those in. Don't worry about the details. So, good times.
It's weird.
So Hulk Hogan goes...
This is where we get our mime scene.
Our first mime scene. Hulk Hogan is wandering along at 1 a.m. past a liquor store, and when you know it, there's a fully dressed mime miming out here. And he sees the mime miming, who is doing, of course, Invisible Box, because mimes are suckers for the classics.
Oh, yeah.
You never see a mime doing anything new. It's Invisible Box, Windy Day, or Rope Pull.
Yeah.
And those are your only options. I mean, I've seen some amazing mime in my day. You've seen the mime bits on the Aristocrats movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, where the guy's doing the fucking the dog as a miming routine?
Yeah.
That's, Billy the Mime is a good mime. There's actually a good mime in the world.
That's a good mime.
Yeah, but anyway, he sees him doing Invisible Box, and he's like, huh, it must be a K7 force field. I'll get you out of there. And I'm like, how does he know it's a K7, first of all? That looks like a K6 to me. Hulk, I'm going to disagree with you on this one.
Now, his idea of getting the mime out of there is to just punch directly at the mime's face, which, of course, he hits and the mime falls down. And is like, ah, there you go. You're welcome. Happy to help, citizen, and walks off. But why would a K7 force field be able to be broken by a dude punching it? And if it was, why wouldn't he be like, hey, mime, why don't you just punch your way out of that force field? Because that's a thing you can do.
So true. I don't know why this scene is even in this. Like, literally, the best we can come up with for random bits of Hulk Hogan business is he encounters a mime.
Well, it's like one of those, guys, who's it still okay for us to beat up? Greasy dirtbags? No, we've got plenty of those. What else can we do? Mimes? Gold. Sold.
Okay, on his walk the next day, he does the mime thing again, and he does little girl with cat stuck in tree.
Yeah.
And here's the best part about the little girl with cat stuck in tree thing. That's Elizabeth Moss. That's her first movie appearance. Elizabeth Moss, who you know now is like Peggy on Mad Men, I want to say.
Or the lead of Fred or whatever.
Of Fred from The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Elizabeth Moss. So just like how Mila Kunis in Santa with Muscles, he is a job creator, Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, he finds children and is like, be in my shitty movie and then have a career.
Yeah, so Elizabeth Moss is in this movie. She has two lines of dialogue, and both of them are, my cat.
And then, that's not my cat.
That's it. That's all she does.
Yeah.
So, just in case you were curious, it's hard to recognize her because she's a little kid.
Yeah.
But there you go. So Hulk Hogan just goes friggin' stomping around, and then Christopher Lloyd follows him and finds his spaceship and lets himself into the spaceship and puts on his battle armor suit and then tries to stop a rape.
Yeah, there are two guys who are pulling a lady and they're like, oh, come on, lady. Oh, let me get some of that, lady. And you're like, oh, wow, I bet RoboCop's about to show up and shoot this dude in the dick.
It's just such a generic rape thing happening. It's not like I'm asking for a classier rape scene or anything, but it's just sort of two random, again, greasy dirtbags. And I want to make sure people know that we're speaking literally when we say greasy in this movie. It's not a euphemism for their attitude or their demeanor. Everyone is liberally covered in grease in this film.
Yeah, if you're a bad guy, someone came up to you with a little bucket of grease and was like, let me just dab some of that on you.
Let's just get you greased up good and greasy. There we go.
There, that's a good look.
Yeah, that's some straight up axle grease from a Volkswagen. That's what that is.
Ooh, yeah. I'm loving this.
Yeah, so two greasy dudes are just hauling a random like street lady around and they're just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sickos, yeah. And then, you know, Christopher Lloyd shows up in battle armor that does not fit him and does a stop! I'll defeat you!
Let that lady go!
Yeah. And then, you know, he starts yelling about how he's invincible or something.
Like, I'll punch you. And they're like, all right, well, I'm going to shoot you. And he's like, oh, no.
Yeah. Also, I like that when he first puts on one of the battle armor gloves from Hulk Hogan's outfit, we get the exact same thing we got in XXX, which is a forearm length glove that is somehow a muscle enhancer.
Yeah. And I love that he knows that that's what it is immediately. Like, he puts it on, he's like, oh, muscle enhancing glove.
And it's like, well, okay, does that mean it enhances your grip or your wrist rotation? What else is it? You can't make it make you better at punching, because punching isn't controlled by the bottom part of your hand.
Yeah.
It's from the shoulder and the elbow, and it doesn't do those.
I mean, yeah, sure. If you want to go ahead and say, like, this is my grip strength glove,
yeah,
and it's for opening up jars or whatever, then sure.
This is perfect for me, a man who was born 110 years old. Oh, I can't open this peanut butter.
Great
Marty.
Scott,
Marty, I can't get these pickles.
Marty, open up this peanut butter.
Wear your muscle-enhancing glove, Doc.
Fine.
I have to go wear two ties and impress the Japanese.
Oh, jeez, Doc. I gotta go back in time and impress the Japanese.
I always forget about that until I'm watching the Back to the Future movies, that there's that scene where he's wearing two side-by-side ties.
I love that that's what their future was.
Yeah.
In the future, double tie.
Double tie.
That's the fashion at the time.
That's just the best. It doesn't get enough love. Everyone always talks about the floating skateboard, but no one remembers double tie.
No one cares about double tie in this, the year of our Lord 2018.
Praise be, Robert Zemeckis. Great job on the double tie. Anyway, he gets shot, Christopher Lloyd does, and falls down, but then he just gets back up.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything to him because he's in super special armor. Let me say, this armor covers maybe a third of his body.
Well, it's like he's wearing an apron and some gloves.
He's got, like, a chest plate that you would find at Party City.
He's got a codpiece.
He's got, like, knee-length boots.
Uh-huh, and a codpiece.
And a codpiece and gloves.
Yeah.
But his,
oh, and a
like,
headband. A headband that straight up, visibly, is just a leather strap that has computer keyboard keys glued to it.
And painted over.
And painted over.
Like, well, I can definitely tell that's the control button on your headband there.
Yeah. He just has about six buttons from an old keyboard stuck to his leather wrist, a headband.
Also, what's the headband doing for you? I understand that, you know, okay, you've got grip-enhancing gloves and, like, rocket boots and a bulletproof vest and a codpiece that detects boners.
Well, that's coming up. But yeah, I think that's just, those are literally keys on there, and you can press it for various effects.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is.
I hit the button on my headband, and then it just starts playing Frere Jacques for some reason. It's a little kid's toy.
It's a mime attractor, so you can punch mimes.
That's it.
Ah, I am a mime, and I detect the sound. I detect the sound of Frere Jacques.
Mime. I got a mime. Mr. Mime.
I will run in close and then stop talking because I am a mime. Otherwise, this podcast beat would not work, eh?
So he grabs both of the dirt bags, slams them together, drops them, and oh, the lady is so appreciative, and
she's like, let me know if there's anything I can do for you. Emphasis on the my vagina.
There's, and it goes to Christopher Lloyd, and of course he's like, oh, that's okay, ma'am. Oh, but the codpiece is beeping and booping at him.
His codpiece has little indicators on the side that switch from yellow to green, and it's just beeping. It's a boner detector.
Like, that's what the codpiece is there for. It's like, oh, I have detected you have a boner. Let me notify the surroundings.
It's like one of those old car alarms from the 80s that talks when you get close to the car. in this situation, it's like, woman detected. Attention, madam. A boner is present.
It's like whenever a truck backs up and it just starts beeping. Whenever you get a boner in this codpiece, it's just like, beep, beep, boner, boner.
Anyway, he flees off into the night wearing the outfit. By the way, all of his usage of the battle armor and shooting the gun emitted enough power that now the bounty hunters are headed to Earth.
Yes.
Just putting that out there.
Also, speaking of car alarms that
I know, I was
going
to say, that's what Hulk Hogan is out doing. He walks past some dude's Ferrari or whatever, and it does the whole, warning, you are too close. Please step away.
You are standing too close to this car.
Have you ever seen one of those, like, in real life?
Never.
I have passed by one, and it freaked the fuck out of me. And all I could think when it happened, I was walking past this car to my own car, and it was like, please step away, please remain 10 feet from the vehicle. And all I could think was like, man, there is no greater encouragement to fuck up a car than having it tell you not to.
Oh yeah. Well, also, like, where do you park such that you're like, oh, I know this won't be constantly going off?
Oh no, the answer is everywhere, because you're an asshole who put in a talking car alarm. You park in as many parking spaces as you can at once because you have a talking car alarm.
Yeah, you're one of those guys that pulls up in the middle of four parking spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's what that is. I'm usually a pretty gentle guy who doesn't want to fuck with other people's cars. But when the car's like, you are too close to me, please step away, I will contact the authorities. I was like, man, I have never wanted to hurt a car.
I have never before wanted to key a car more than I want to right now.
How do you pants a car? Someone tell me. Help, guys. I need like five guys over here to help me get this car into a toilet.
Yeah, it is just, oh, it's infuriating.
Yeah.
And of course, Hulk Hogan has the same reaction, but he manages to look in the car and find the thing
that is talking.
That is doing the talking, rips it out, and the car alarm is apparently sentient.
Yeah, because it starts going through a death soliloquy?
Well, it's like, oh, never mind. You can stand as close as you want to. Oh, God, please, don't do this.
This is what death feels like.
Oh, no.
It was like, wow, that guy spent a lot of money on his talking car alarm. And in fact, he invented sentient robots, and then he only used them to tell people to stay away from his Ferrari.
Oh, don't worry. That's just the car that belongs to the head of Cyberdyne.
I think it's just like Rick from Rick and Morty's car. It's just the latest application of the butter-passing robot.
Yeah. What do you do? You tell people to stay away from my car.
What else do I do? No, that's it. Oh, my God.
Yeah, welcome to it.
That's the gag for it. Except instead, it's just another little bit of Hulk Hogan shtick. Okay, so he has
to deal with that the cat, where he does the deal where he like pulls the branch down. That's not my cat, and then lets it go, and the cat goes flying because he lets the branch go.
The cat gets catapulted across the grounds, and we never quite establish what the hell Elizabeth Moss was crying about exactly, because we don't know that her cat's in the tree or anything. He just walks past this kid who's like, my cat, and then he's like, oh, hang on. He pulls his branch down. That's not my cat. Ka-tunk, flies away. He leaves.
Yeah,
like she's like, my cat is dead or something. Like, what was the rest
Why
of the
were
sentence
you crying
about
next
a cat
to a different cat? Yeah. Then
my cat isn't as good as this one.
That cat's better than my cat.
My cat can talk, and it's talking to me.
A talking cat?
A talking cat?
We also get...
Pay attention to your beeping codpiece.
Lol. We get, of course, the scene of skateboarding where a bunch of skateboard kids are like, yeah, we skateboard, and then... Fucking Hulk Hogan's like, I'll attempt to skateboard, and then falls on his ass, and he's like, "Raw, get away from me, kids!"
And then he throws the skateboard into space.
Literally into space. As in, there is a scene later where the bounty hunters are coming to Earth, and the skateboard flies past them.
You know what? That was the best joke in this movie, though. That really
the callback to the skateboard?
Because it had continuity to it, and it wasn't just... Well, even the mime jokes have continuity, but they have nothing to do with anything.
No.
It's just Hulk Hogan encounters the same mime three times. Oh my God, this movie is a masterpiece of continuity.
The problem with this is, I mean, I don't really need to care about this, but later on, when he comes back to these skateboarding guys, they're like, oh, skateboard, whatever. Oh, don't use my new skateboard, and throw it into space. But then he uses that kid's skateboard and is immediately a skateboard professional and can do like handstands and super flip tricks. And-
yeah, well, it's amusing because the first time he gets on a skateboard, he just flips over ass over tea kettle and lands on his back, right?
Yeah.
The second time he gets on a skateboard, the same thing happens, except the skateboard is now magnetically stuck to his feet, and instead of just flipping onto his back, he does a full flip and lands on the skateboard again.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh yeah, of course, because if you have the skateboard tied to you and you can do backflips without any kind of jump motion, then yeah, sure, why not? But then he does. He just goes skateboarding by in his hands and
tricks. Again that Hulk Hogan can't be shown to be bad at anything. So the fact that he failed once means he has to come back and be the world's greatest skateboarder without any practice.
But because they couldn't afford like a big dude who's good at skateboarding and looks enough like Hulk Hogan, all the tricks are just him going back and forth across a static frame in various poses.
Yeah, like it's him on a handstand, but you can't see his hand on the board.
Yeah.
So it's obviously just him holding onto a wheeling dolly or whatever, and someone holding his legs up as they wheel him across the frame.
Yeah, and then the next shot is him going by in like the walk like an Egyptian pose. Like, that's helpful.
Yeah.
Just sort of, look at this, I'm a good skateboarder, I can go in lines.
And there's a whole bunch of that, oh man, he just did a crazy flip trick, and we don't get to see it.
Yeah. And then, this is the end of the movie, by the way, we're just telling it all. He pulls a super future skateboard out of a burlap sack he was toting along with him.
Yeah, he's like, here, kid, have my old board or whatever.
Have my skateboard. And he gives him, like, a future skateboard. And the kid's like, yeah, and he skateboards away on it at the end.
Great.
It's got six wheels.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that even though Hogan is shown to be not good at something once, there is definitely the Chekhov's gun payoff of, no, he's good at everything, don't worry.
Yeah,
that's a Hulk Hogan thing.
That's number four. He was briefly allowed to be bad at something only if he could be the master of it later on with no kind of, you know, step between them.
Well, that's why I was like, oh wow, this movie is actually a departure for him, because in that scene he's shown being bad at something and also he's an asshole to those kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh wow, Hogan's being a mean guy to kids and is bad at something. But of course the scene that corresponds to it is, now I'm the best at it and all of these kids love me.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, great.
So there's a whole plot going on in this movie that we haven't talked about yet, which is that Larry Miller needs to sell a specific set of architectural plans to these Japanese businessmen, but only Christopher Lloyd out of this whole building full of architects can do the plans, and only if he works late at night, which he doesn't do because he's busy doing random Hulk Hogan shtick.
Also, he's the only one that can explain what's going on with the architectural plans, because at one point they ask, like, okay, Larry Miller, you need to explain what's going on with these plans, like, show us what's happening with them, and he's just like, oh, there's floors and walls and ceilings. And
yeah, you know what? We've decided to add a ceiling free of charge to every single room. And of course, because you can't just have a floor sandwich next to a ceiling, we're including, at a slight additional charge, walls. And you know, he just literally talks for 24 hours like that.
Yeah.
And Larry Miller is a beacon of fun in this movie, because Larry Miller is a competent, fun actor.
Yeah. No, he's having fun doing his Larry Miller shtick, which is fine.
Yeah.
But it's also, there's just no one else you employ that understands how blueprints work. Like, even if you are the head of this architectural firm and don't understand how it works because you're just management, that's fine. You can call literally anyone that works for you.
Well, no, it's an architectural firm that employs one manager, like one boss, his secretary, and one architect.
Yep, that's it. And they have like a big party where all of the company is there, and there's just a bunch of random people. And
presumably none of them are architects.
Presumably, you'd think.
Yeah, so also at one point, Christopher Lloyd finds himself in his boss's office again. This is after Hulk Hogan discovers that Christopher Lloyd fired his gun. And he's like, oh God, we're being tracked. So he goes off to find Christopher Lloyd and yell at him, gets to the door to Larry Miller's office, and this is when we finally meet the love interest for Hulk Hogan in this movie. It's Larry Miller's secretary, and this brings up the funniest thing, like the one you'd be least likely to notice, that is a Hulk Hogan regular routine. All of Hulk Hogan's love interests are the kind of women that the real world Terry Bollea would pick up in a bar.
Yes. Anyone that is in a love interest thing for Hulk Hogan in a movie is like, oh yeah, I could definitely see Hulk Hogan going into a Florida bar and picking up this random chick.
Yeah, because she is, I mean, not to be uncharitable, but she is definitely, you know, a skinny, fake blonde, big, fake titted woman who they had to ADR the smoker voice out of.
Yeah, this is definitely someone you would find like four whiskeys deep in a Florida bar somewhere.
Uh huh.
And they'd be watching like boat racing.
I love fan boat racing.
Yeah, like that is exactly what you would find.
Uh-huh.
And it's her, and it's always her.
It's her in every one of these movies, as if Hulk Hogan is doing that bit of casting.
Yeah.
He's like, hey guys, I found this woman down in, would you believe it, Saratoga?
Yes, I would definitely believe it, Hulk.
I would definitely believe you found her outside of a tent at a Def Leppard concert in Sarasota, Florida.
I was in Tallahassee and I found this beaut. Oh God, please don't refer to her as a beaut.
I found her stuck in the grill of my four-wheel drive Volkswagen off-roader. Yep, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was cold, so obviously she crawled in there for warmth.
I had to wrestle one of our giant palmetto bugs to win this lady.
Oops, I brought the palmetto bug.
Well, whatever. We'll put it in the movie.
It's fine.
Every one of them is basically just some bar woman that he found and hauled in and was like, put her in the film. She can be the woman who has to kiss me. So in this movie, she plays a take-no-prisoner secretary who basically
has a gun at work.
Has a gun, and she gets up in Hulk's face and is like, you need to take a seat. And so when you know it, he walks off and gets a bench and comes back.
Shtick.
Anyway, this gets the plot rolling. Christopher Lloyd comes out of the office. Hulk Hogan is there, and he's like, you've set up a signal that's going to attract the bounty hunters. I have to leave Earth now.
Yeah, and we got to get all of this tech that you left, because he dropped a gun when he beat up the thugs.
Yes. So Christopher Lloyd doesn't want Hulk Hogan to go for no reason.
I don't understand what's going on, but he's like, okay, sure, but you've got to help me with getting stuff. Like, Christopher Lloyd is very nebulous at this point in the movie, where he's just kind of like, I'm here to help you for some reason.
My favorite thing of the setup payoff of this movie is that Hulk Hogan's ship won't start unless he can get 40 pounds of simian crystal.
Which we have found out
is what Larry Miller's trophies are made of.
Larry Miller has all these architecture trophies that, of course, he doesn't do any architecture work, but he's just gotten them because he takes the credit. But, oh boy, that's what his trophies are.
They're all made out of simian crystal, which I don't know if that's real, but it sure sounds like monkey crystal.
It certainly does, and I really hope that it isn't real.
I kind of hope that just ape crystal is a thing that is that exists, and it is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's what you make super monkey balls out of.
They're all made out of simian crystal, which is why they can bounce and fly and stuff.
Yeah.
And then the monkey like runs out of air and just dies in there. Yeah, that's why there aren't any new Super Monkey Ball games.
Yeah.
All your like, what are the names? Like and App. They all had names that were like
Bip Bap,
Jeb Jeb and stuff like that. All of them were just dead.
Jeb with an exclamation point.
Heb Heb.
Yeah, it's all that.
Yeah, they're all dead now, just in case you were curious about the old Super Monkey Ball game characters.
In case you were wondering, if you boot up your game system and put Super Monkey Ball in, they'll all be dead at the main screen.
Although, to be fair, that's true of every character in every Dreamcast game. If you turn on your Dreamcast, Choo Choo Rocket has died, Shenmue, definitely passed on a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, you start any of those games up, and it's just a corpse, and you got to look at it. It's real creepy.
You have been detected attempting to load Soul Calibur 2. All their souls have passed on. Dreamcast game jokes.
That's what you came here for.
That's what the empty skies of Arcadia.
So now they got to fight these fucking
bounty hunters,
and they are just slapstick fighting with them.
Yeah, you know, you'd think if you had Hulk Hogan and The Undertaker,
that's the problem I had, is when I was like, oh man, one of the bounty hunters is The Undertaker, and you've got Hulk Hogan, you're definitely going to have some actual professional wrestler-style fights in this.
Yeah.
Like, they are going to show up and be like, hey, let's fight it out, and you'll get people doing, like, pile drivers, and, like, fucking The Undertaker is going to do his Undertaker pile driver and, like, do the whole arms crossed thing. Mm-hmm. That'd be great. That'd be fucking great.
Instead of that, nothing.
It's just comedy nonsense where you're like, you have rocket boots and I'll knock your rocket boots together and you fly into a toilet.
If you're wondering what the wrestling connection is, there's one point where Tony Longo's character gets smashed by an elevator and then the elevator door opens and the Undertaker's in the elevator and the Hulk says, what is this, a tag team?
Yep.
And that's it.
That is the full extent of the wrestling stuff in this.
That's the, you know, the Charles Barkley, I can't shoot. Oh, it's not Charles Barkley. Who is it? It's that's in all the Shaq. It's
Shaquille O'Neal.
It's Shaq having to point out that he can't shoot free throws in every movie he's ever been in.
Yeah, it's, oh, hey guys, I'm fucking an iron worker and a genius, and I made this steel armor. Also, can't shoot free throws. But up. That's my shtick.
That's what you needed to know. That's the joke you were waiting for.
Yeah.
In this movie, it's, what is this, a tag team? And then we're done. Except for the Undertaker's line, which we missed because John was rattling one of his jokes I wasn't paying attention to over it real loud.
Yep.
So I had to back up, and it took like 10 minutes to get it to back up. And when we finally did, it was the one Undertaker line in the movie, which was a little boy voice saying, you're dead, Shep Ramsey.
I'm going to get you, Shep Ramsey.
Oh, no wonder you guys never talk.
And that was the whole thing.
Great. That's the joke. The joke is they were silent up until this point in the film, and the reason is they've got little kid voices.
I wish I'd been paying attention to the joke you told, because it might have been better. I don't know.
Oh, it was definitely way better.
I certainly wasn't going to pay attention to it. But
obviously.
It might have been better. Actually, I remember the joke. You were just yelling about how that's the bit because he just said the tag team line.
Yeah.
So, okay. So... God damn this movie. They defeat the fucking bounty hunters by just sort of bonking them around for a while.
Yeah, they get dink-danked and slapped around, and there you go.
They get all the grease wiped off them, and wouldn't you know it, that's their Samson's hair.
Oh, our grease! Oh no, my power was in the grease!
And they get the simian crystals, which they use to start powering his ship, and then Emperor Suter shows up.
And he's got Christopher Lloyd's family in tow, because somehow he knew to do that? I mean, I get that the bounty hunter showed up because there was an energy spike.
Yes.
Okay, great. But Suter shows up to Christopher Lloyd's family's house, kidnaps them, and takes them to Hulk
the ship.
Hogan's ship.
Yes.
Okay, I can understand how you know where the ship is because he's powering it up, but how the fuck do you know even that Christopher Lloyd and his family exist?
It's because he's the Emperor, John.
Oh, of course.
I don't know if you, maybe you missed that, but it's very clear in the context of the film. Frankly, I'm a little offended. It's because he's the Emperor.
I see now. He's the Emperor, and full stop.
Yeah.
Explanation over.
Yeah, yeah. But how is this hard for you?
Well, I've got this codpiece, and it's beepity booping at me.
Oh, well, that's probably why all the blood's out of your brain. Check your beeping codpiece.
Hulk manages to... Okay, he sets his ship to self-destruct,
mm-hmm.
and then is like, hey, Suter, let them go, and I'll let you kill me. And he's like, okay.
Oh, God, I forgot. Suter's like, I'm nothing if not a man of my word. And then he lets the family go, and he just walks around Hulk Hogan shooting near him.
Yeah, like, Suter's like, all right, it's time to kill you. And then he just shoots near Hulk Hogan.
Because he's toying with him, but it's the dumbest toying with ever. He's like, bazoo, bazoo. Oh, I missed you again, Hulk Hogan. Maybe I'll hit you next time. Bazoo. Oh, that one got some of your gross hair.
Oh, no, my gross hair. I'm losing it fast.
That's insured.
And they fight, and there's another scene where he sort of turns lizardy and then turns into a full alien, which I'm not sure if that's supposed to mean he's a lizard underneath a human disguise, or if he's like the Hulk or the lizard, and like he got angry and turned into this monster.
No, he wears a disguise to look like human, guys.
Yeah, but he's not a man. He's an alien, you.
He's an alien, boo. He's an alien, boo.
My boo.
Yeah, that's all it is. And there's always one guy who can tell.
He's an alien!
Oh, come on. Don't be so mean to Mr. Humanton.
Meanwhile, he gestures radically at Ted Cruz.
That's an alien! His disguise is melting clean off!
You can see!
Oh, don't worry, Mr. Cruz. We'll have this guy taken out of here.
Yes, that would be great for me, a human.
Also, please list how much boron it would take to kill you.
Yeah. So that's definitely what is going on here.
Anyway, it turns out that the ship being set to auto-destruct does nothing, because ultimately it's just Christopher Lloyd comes driving back in his shitty, busted-up car and runs over David Suter's character. The end.
Yeah.
Not David Suter. David Suter's not in this movie. He runs over
Emperor
Suter.
And the weird thing to me is the ship still self-destructs.
Yeah.
There's no point to it. Like, the setting it to self-destruct was just pointless, because he could have been like, okay, let me come out and try and beat you, and he beats Suter anyway, and then the car runs over the guy, but he could have walked back into a ship, hit, all right, turn off self-destruct, walk back out to where the dude is currently under your car, shoot him.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, his ship blows up, but it's okay, because the bounty hunter ship is still on the planet, so he has a way off, and that's what the ending is. The ending is that Christopher Lloyd walks into Larry Miller's office, where he's talking with a Japanese businessman, and he doesn't win, he just quits.
Yeah, he's just like, why don't you describe what it is to these people? Because I quit. You'll never be anything without me. Blah! Christopher Lloyd.
And then he just leaves. We don't know what he's going to do now or anything like that. It doesn't appear to matter.
No, he doesn't have a plan or anything, but whatever.
But then he drives home triumphantly. We get our fourth iteration of the weird race car meeting at the fucking like stoplight scene.
Except, and it is the literal last scene of the movie.
Yeah.
Is this stoplight scene.
So I guess let's cover it anyway, and then we can talk about what happens with Hulk Hogan. He does what he always does, drives right up to the yellow light, but then he passes through it, even though no one else does.
Yeah, everyone else, for some reason, stops before the yellow light, and he goes through.
As if his wimpiness was somehow transferred to them.
And he gets out of his car with a laser gun, shoots the red light, and everyone cheers.
And then he starts waving them through.
And there's then a caravan with him at the head, and he's like, I have freed you. Follow me, for I am fucking Streetlight Moses, and I have destroyed that which oppressed you.
I just wanted one car to tentatively start driving out into the intersection in his direction and get smashed by a truck.
Yeah, like, you know, he starts waving people through the red light that he has now blown up, and just a truck is like, bam.
What is this? This isn't his triumphant manhood. He's just randomly shooting stoplights.
Yeah, that, I don't... What? Why? It's How, like, is that the end of this movie?
Basically, instead of Hulk Hogan teaching him to be a man, Hulk Hogan taught him how to be a Florida hayseed. Teached him how to be a Florida-style hayseed. That's what it is. He teaches him to be a fucking redneck. Yeah, blast that stop sign with your gun.
All right, what you need to do is drive by this guy's mailbox and hit it with a bat.
Get in a fight over meth while naked in the middle of a street. That's what a man does.
That's what a real Florida man does. What I need you to do is go fight a gator, and then when you win, wear its head.
Stab a guy to death with a frozen fish.
I need you to rob a McDonald's naked.
All right, listen, Christopher Lloyd. If you want to be a true man, you need to get pulled over for being too drunk on a riding lawnmower.
That's what being a man means.
That's manhood.
I'm from Planet Florida.
All right. So, also, Hulk Hogan leaves and goes back up to space.
And takes his weird Florida girlfriend with him.
Takes his Florida. He doesn't need to do anything on Earth. What's she missing out on exactly?
He's like, oh, well, this guy quit. I may as well also quit my one job to go fly into space with this weird dirtbag.
Oh, do we have to leave today? It's wet t-shirt night at the clam sucker.
That's fine. I know space clam sucker.
They're so Florida. We're going to Planet Florida.
God damn it, Planet
it's
Florida.
It's nothing but Def Leppard concerts and hurricanes.
Woo!
Both the drink and the weather.
Don't you worry, it's only the north part of Florida.
It's the middle dick part of Florida, where all the swamps and terrible people are.
We'll have a two-person mosquito and a garage to park it in.
There you go. That's more or less Suburban Commando.
It is not what you expected.
Yeah, so there you go. I'm gonna go ahead and ask Jeff, why don't you tell me what the best thing in this movie was?
Oh gosh. Larry Miller.
Larry Miller, I mean, I'll definitely agree with you on that. That was some good stuff.
Because Larry Miller's just sort of a wind-up shtick machine. You just wind him up and he just starts Larry Millering all over the place.
Yeah.
And he's got a good patter and it's always fun to watch it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I liked Larry Miller's appearance in this film.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing?
If I was going to take something that wasn't Larry Miller, I would probably say my favorite thing in this was that brief moment where I thought it was going to break with the Hulk Hogan formula.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Where he's mean to kids and shows he can't actually do something. I was like, oh, that's neat. Because now you're treading into actual Kindergarten Cop territory where Schwarzenegger, even in his worst films, was able to be shown to be, like, not great at everything, and he could be the butt of a joke occasionally.
No, like, there's a certain level you have to sink to as an actor. You have to be an unbelievably bad actor to get to the point where your movies are all about how great you are. Because it's pretty much him and Steven Seagal.
Oh, yeah. Because the actual action stars that have any level of charisma are 100% okay with self-deprecating humor.
Yeah. You can list the, like, three actors in Hollywood that aren't. And they are. And this is in order of fame. You've got Hulk Hogan, Steven Seagal, and Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel is the new iteration of this nonsense. The guy who's like, every movie has to be about how great I am. Every movie I'm in has to start with me explaining to people from another culture how I appreciate their culture, and it has to end with me fucking not one, but seven ladies.
Well, yeah, it is that tried and true formula of, I'm great at everything, I'm also a really nice guy as well, and every lady wants me.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what you need for the formula of making one of these shitty actors that takes themselves too seriously movies.
Yeah. I feel like Vin Diesel's a little more charismatic than the other two, but I think it's honestly might just be because he's younger. Except at this point, he's like 50.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just he's got slightly better people around him.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think the writing and directing and all that around Vin Diesel is way better. If Vin Diesel was making a movie like this in fucking 1992 or something and had the world's shittiest scriptwriter and a shoestring budget, you would definitely be seeing Vin Diesel is Santa with muscles.
I gotta see there. I think that movie exists. I think it's called The Pacifier.
Yes.
So we got.
He has a suburban commando, Mr. Mom type movie.
Yeah.
But even then, it's still better because it's a higher production value.
Fair enough. Okay. So those are our favorite things. One thing I think we forgot to mention in this movie, which I might even list as my least favorite.
Go for it.
Is that they never resolve the evil next door neighbor car builder stuff. It basically boils down to there's a point where Christopher Lloyd drives up the same as the first time, and their cars are in his way, and he's like, oh, I have to park on the other side of the street, great Scott, or whatever. And then Hulk Hogan walks over and picks up the front of one of the cars and shoves it backwards so he can park, which looks impressive until you realize that's a, you know...
That car weighs like 10 pounds.
Well, it's a drag racer. All of the weight is on the back wheels. It's like him being super impressed by someone lifting a full wheelbarrow from the part of the wheelbarrow you're supposed to lift it by.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, oh, look at that. He can pick up the handles of that wheelbarrow. Yeah, that's the point of wheelbarrows.
Yeah, that's what they're supposed to do.
That's how they work. It's you've just seen him display the concept of the lever. Wow. So, but then the guys come running out to Hulk Hogan and they're like, you know what we're going to do to you? And Hulk Hogan has maybe the worst line he has in the movie. Well, let me guess. You're going to rip my face off and then tear off my arms and beat me with them. And then you're going to feed the biggest part of me that's left to a dog. And then the dog's going to take a dump that's part of my body. And then you're going to stomp on that part of my body. And they're like, no, we're going to sue you.
No, this is the 90s. We're going to sue you.
Yeah. What a fucking terrible ending to that sequence.
And then never deal with them again.
They're still there. Their cars are still all over the place in every scene. Also, there's two other guys driving around in a sports car in the neighborhood that almost hit a kid that's never resolved.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's just fucking boring shtick.
Yeah.
So that's my least favorite. You?
Worst thing in this movie to me, I have to say that fucking ending is the worst to me. Having Christopher Lloyd become Streetlight Moses is the dumbest possible ending you could have.
It's dumb, but I appreciate our take on it, which is that what he's really learned how to be is a Florida redneck.
Yeah, I mean, the problem
he's turned into Florida man.
He didn't turn into I'm a guy who stands by his conviction and like I'm gonna get a raise or I'm gonna go through lights or do whatever. He's just an asshole now.
No, he literally gets turned into a Florida asshole.
Yep.
He quits his job and shoots a streetlight, and that's his big manhood moment.
What happens to Christopher Lloyd at the end of this movie is he becomes an unemployed asshole who shoots street signs and lights. No. Oh, good. Great. I can find this guy in Arizona right now if I wanted
to. That's why this movie isn't 5 minutes longer than it is, because it would show him buying up a bunch of Oxy.
Show him getting a 24-pack and drinking half of it on the drive home.
He'd have to like sell his bike to buy a 30-pack of beer, or sell his car for a bike and a 30-pack, and then we'd see him riding through a suburban neighborhood drinking beer on a bike that's too small for him. Hey, kids, hop on board the bike.
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Have a Molson Triple X. It tastes like beer with wine in it.
Yeah, so that's that was definitely the least favorite thing for me, was that was just dumb. Let's give our rating of the movie. We're each going to give a 0 to 5, gives the rating out of 10. Jeff?
Like a lot of the movies that we review, I am going to end up giving this one a score based on how much my jokes about it amused me, which is what's keeping it from being the 0 score of not a film. This is a 1 for me.
I mean, this is definitely a film. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
I'll give it a 2. It's not good, but it's definitely a film with very clear jokes. It's got jokes in the way that, like, watching a fucking, like, Shriner tell jokes is...
Yeah, no, it's got, like, Abe Vigoda jokes. I mean, yeah. It's
old school vaudeville.
It's got Catskills humor in it, is what it is. I'm okay on that. If I really want to see a bunch of mime jokes, then also I'll probably go ahead and radar range me a couple of Johnny Cakes. Start complaining about the Kaiser. I mean...
yeah, so there you go. We'll give it a 3 out of 10.
I'm surprised
us.
This movie doesn't have a scene in it where Hulk Hogan puts like two muffins on the ends of forks and pretends they're dancing feet.
Well, no.
Oh, look at this. Hey, kids, look at this. I'm doing a fun dance. Hey, you can learn to do this at home. Don't take any wooden nickels now.
Man, the weird part is still to me that it's not like Hogan is writing these movies.
No,
someone has decided this is the humor that Hulk Hogan needs to do.
Yeah, the people who wrote this movie like basically just watched No Holds Barred and were like, all right.
I guess I'll just do that.
Okay. So it's a Hulk Hogan movie? Great. I'll go out to the garage and dust off my granddad's jokes. I'll see what's in there.
Weird. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. That has been Suburban Commando. And of course, if you like what we do, if you want to support us, we do have our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/systemmastery and you can give us a dollar or more there. Helps support the show. We get to keep the lights on, keep food in our mouths, keep jokes coming that are terrible, just like any given Hulk Hogan movie.
Please hurry. I have a child on the way.
Yeah, there's a wee one on the way. Slowly but surely, it inexorably comes. It's like It Follows,
but
with a baby.
Slowly but surely. It's due in April. I am terrified. Please donate today.
Yeah. You have the option of doing that, or you can, if you just want to give us a lump sum of some dollar, then you can go to our website, systemmasterypodcast.com. We've got a Give Us Money button. So if you don't feel like doing a monthly thing, or you just don't like Patreon, whatever, you can go there, give us, you know, a dollar, $5, whatever, who cares? We also have the option of, if you want, for $50, we've got our big old Jumbotron announcement where we will read whatever.
Yep, that's what we'll do. We'll read something, not whatever. There's a lot of contingencies.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, nothing terrible, and it's got to be like under 2 minutes. Don't be stupid about this.
Yeah, I ain't gonna read your Gamergate shit manifesto or whatever.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not gonna be mean to The Last Jedi. I don't care how much money you give me. Actually, no, wait, I do.
Oh, hold on.
I'll say something mean about The Last Jedi.
Yes, I will.
For about $200, I'll say something mean about The Last Jedi. But John's gonna also need $200.
It's $200 apiece.
Apiece.
So you can also, while you're there on the website, check out all of our other content. We do a whole bunch of shows, and you can, of course, follow us on Facebook, Twitter. We're System Mastery on everything, systemmastery@gmail.com. And
Reddit, Tumblr.
You can go to the r/System Mastery on Reddit, and we've got our big list of movies. If there's a movie you want us to watch, go there, suggest it, put it on the big list, and then when we do our next movie mastery, who knows? We might watch what you suggest.
Heck, we even used to be System Mastery on OkCupid till they made us go by our first name. All right.
So there you go. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, you have a good one.